Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Happy Thursday to you, boys and girls. We come to you live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. I'm so excited. This is our first week in this earlier time slot, and our next guest is our first in-studio guest. So this is history being made right now, which you can watch on our webcast, watchda.com. Boxing star Danny Daniel Jacobs, a.k.a. the Miracle Man, who will be fighting on Saturday at Barclays Center in his native Brooklyn. Joining us here on the show, he's 32-2, 29 KOs, and you can follow him on Twitter at Daniel Jacobs TKO. Dan, how you doing, buddy?
I'm blessed. I'm super fortunate. I'm grateful. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure, man. I've seen your name as both Dan, Daniel, and Danny. When it comes to a champion boxer, I want to make sure I get it right. So what do you prefer here?
Daniel's fine.
Okay, Daniel's okay. So this is so cool because you grew up in Brownsville in Brooklyn, and they're going to be celebrating your day, Daniel Jacobs Day, coming up on Saturday. You're fighting in Brooklyn. What does that mean?
Well, I won't actually be fighting on Saturday, but Saturday will be the day where they're going to be announcing me at the Sean Porter Berto fight at the Barclays Center, and they're going to be giving me my own day. But it's important to me, and it's special and, you know, amazing for me to have this opportunity because I'm a Brooklynite, and, you know, to be given an opportunity to have an award or have your own day for some of the work that you do in the community, not just in the sport of boxing, does my heart very well, because this philanthropy thing that I'm doing with my foundation, the Get in the Ring Foundation, you know, it means a lot to me. And I don't think the world gets a chance to see the other side of us fighters or us boxers who, you know, do so much work in the community as well.
You battled cancer. What you're helping children do is also give support to battling cancer, also bullying and obesity through wellness and leadership programs. That's the Get in the Ring Foundation. What will that day be like on Saturday? Do you have a timeline? Do you have an itinerary? What do you want to do?
I just want to enjoy Brooklyn. I want to enjoy the love in that building that night. I want to bring attention to this foundation thing that we're doing. So we're going to be promoting that very heavily within the arena that night. And this award for me is, you know, this is probably the first box we've ever received an award like this. For me to have an opportunity like this just lets me know I'm doing something great, and to have that pat on the back from the community, it's everything.
You, obviously, through that foundation, as I mentioned, supporting kids, children that have gone through cancer or going through cancer, you did the same exact thing. You were diagnosed in 2011 with life-threatening bone cancer. Doctors said you'd never walk again. Here you are returning to the ring. You're healthy. You're good. You took, I think it was 19 months off of the sport when you were diagnosed.
Correct.
Those 19 months, do you look back and say those were dark times? Were they learning times? Were they bright times? How do you describe them?
They were definitely a learning time for me, learning who I truly am when my back is against the wall, learning the true grit that I have within. When you're facing a life-threatening disease such as cancer, you know, and you suddenly not become invincible like you used to think when you were a kid, you know, you start to value things more in life. And that's why I'm happy at this point that I'm at now, because I get to display the soft part of me, not just going inside the ring and punching on guys, but I have a chance to, you know, display who I truly am based off of the experiences I have in my life.
It's amazing. Daniel Jacobs joining us here on the show. You're a warm guy. You have a soft side. You're a thoughtful guy. And yet, when you go into the ring, you're a warrior. So how do you have two such distinct parts of your personality? Was it always like that?
I think, you know, when you are a professional, you just go to work every day, you take care of your business, and you go home. Two different people when you're at work and when you're at home with your family and your everyday life. So that's how I look at boxing. I'm a really good fighter inside the ring, but outside the ring, I'm complete opposite. I used to be a mama's boy growing up. You know, I had a whole bunch of women in my family who taught me the importance and values of life. And that's what, you know, that's what shows in my personality.
But it's interesting because when people go to work, they punch a 9-to-5, they have a briefcase, they go to work, they come home, maybe they're a different guy. For you, though, you got to go into a ring and beat on people. So that's a totally different kind of side of you. Did you always have an aggression that you wanted to get out? Was it a constructive aggression when you found boxing when you were young? How did that work?
You know, it's kind of weird because the reason why I got into boxing, because I never was a kid who fought. You know, I used to get beat up by my bigger brother, and that was the only fighting that I've done. But it was a bully that was in school. I was in the eighth grade, and he picked on me, and we got into a fight in school, and we got in trouble. But I found out that the same kid was going down to the local boxing program, the PAL, and he was taking up classes. So I said, maybe I can go down there, and we can box and do it the right way and not get in trouble for my parents. So I went down, and it was like love at first sight. I just loved everything about boxing. Beat the bully up. He never returned, and I stuck with it, and I found a new passion, and I found a new career and a way out of all my troubles.
Bullying is such a big discussion point now in America and with kids in society. I was bullied. I kind of feel like everybody was bullied at some point in time, but now it's finally become, hey, let's try to stop this. If you're a kid and you're getting bullied right now, what's your advice to that kid that's you but is growing up right now?
It's great you mentioned that. I actually had an event yesterday at Gleason's Gym in Brooklyn with my foundation, and it was this kid there that, you know, we focus on bullying as well. We focus on children with cancer, obesity, and children who's going through bullying. So there was this kid at the program yesterday who pulled me to the side, and he was asking me what could he do, you know, to stop the bullies from bullying him within school. And we sat there and talked for about maybe 15, 20 minutes, and I gave him some great advice and techniques that I use when I was a kid, because I had big, well, I'll say, you know, my ears stick out a little bit. So I was teased as, you know, as a kid. And, you know, I used to go through the same things that this kid was going through. And I was giving him some really great advice on who he can go to, going to our website where we have programs where kids can maybe have someone they can call, or maybe have something that they can go to, or someone that they can go to. But ultimately, it's about building your self-confidence, because when these kids are in the world today, especially through social media, you can be contacted any way, shape, or form. It's much easier to be bullied nowadays than it used to be back in the day. So self-development is one of the things that we teach with these children, and I'm proud of that because I used to be a victim myself.
It's interesting you bring up the technology, because you know, when you and I are growing up, there is no internet. There is no social media the way that it is. And as you said, if you're going to get bullied, it's the kid at school that's going to do it to your face, do it to you on the bus, do it to you on the block, on the walk home from school or whatever, in the schoolyard. Now, you don't even have to be face-to-face with them. And so because of that, does that mean that this generation of kids dealing with it has to deal with it in a different way, or it's just way harder? Is it way more? How does that make it different for a kid today?
I mean, look, it's evident. The way the world works now, it's easier for kids to have that access to be bullied. So yes, it's much harder for kids to cope with bullying as it was back in the day. So that's why we have to raise the awareness. That's why we have to help. That's why we have to make these programs so where kids can have someone to talk to, have somewhere to go when there'll be a bully, because it's going to happen regardless. I mean, everyone gets bullied. Even adults still get bullied to this day. So, you know, there have to be some type of outlet for these children.
And social media doesn't help, because social media allows bullies to be anonymous and to just kind of take their jabs instead of actually having to face their victim. And I mean, even I see it, maybe you see it on social media as well. People that don't like the show, don't like you, don't like whatever, are just going to hide behind some anonymous avatar, not a real name, and just try to pick at you and get under your skin. And I think if you're a kid, maybe if you're an adult too. It's just, it's relentless, and it can be hard to deal with if you can't just block it out. I think for maybe you and I in the public spotlight, it's easier because there's more of it. So you just, you know, it's going to come with the territory. But for somebody that's not used to that, that's a really tough thing with social media, right?
Yeah, very true. I think it goes back to what I was saying, just the self-confidence that has to be taught, and these kids has to know their values. So when I was growing up, you know, I used to always say, "Mom, I don't like my ears. You know, I wish I can change my appearance." But as I got older, I started to appreciate it, and it wasn't anything anyone can say that allowed me to believe that I wasn't beautiful or a special person.
Made you unique, right?
Made me very unique.
And you embrace it.
Indeed.
It's pretty cool. Daniel Jacobs joining us here on the show, the Miracle Man. He's going to have his day in Brooklyn coming up on Saturday. Now at Barclays Center, they're going to have a fight coming up on Saturday night, so he's going to be part of that. And last month, you fought one of the fights of your life. I mean, it was amazing against Golovkin in front of nearly 20,000 in Madison Square Garden. New York Post headline, Golovkin is the champ. Jacobs is the star. So you got a lot of cred. You got a lot of respect. What was that night like?
The night was unbelievable. It was the night that I've always dreamed of, you know, when I first put on those pair of gloves, fighting one of the best men out there in my division and proving to the world that I was the best. We didn't get the decision that night, but we won the hearts of a lot of people and a lot of fans. And we definitely skyrocketed as far as, you know, having people support us. And, you know, I'm grateful for that. To have the opportunity to fight, to be undisputed champion of the world, to be Triple G stopper, you know, all these things could have been accomplished in one night. And I felt like we accomplished the majority of it, but ultimately I'm happy.
When you get the decision and you're in the ring, is it a moment where your heart sinks? Is it just the moment where you're feeling the rush of 20,000 people watching you? What is that like?
I think nerves are inevitable, but it's about how you deal with those nerves. You know, that's the key in boxing, being able to channel and come with your inner self to become one with the goal that you have. When everyone was leaving the ring, you know, the whole team, everyone gets in, and then they still, and then before the first round, before the first bell rings, you know, you're just like, man, it was everybody inside the ring now. Now it's just, you know, me and this guy, like, man, you start to get a little nervous. But then once that bell rings, it's just, you know, everything goes out the window. You're completely focused.
That was probably the toughest fight of Golovkin's career. That was probably the biggest challenge that he ever faced. It's got to give you some pride knowing that out of everybody he's ever faced in his career, you gave him the best run.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why we're calling for the rematch as well, because I do believe it was such an entertaining fight that the fans want to see it one more time.
What was the X's and O's behind it that you guys brought to the table and knew, okay, this is how we're going to give him his best fight ever?
Well, it's just I knew what I brought to the table. I knew that I was an athletic guy. I knew that I had speed, power, the ring IQ to be able to compete with him at a high level. And let's just face it, I was the biggest middleweight that he's fought. So I knew all those things combined, we would have a very successful good night.
Feels like you guys are going to get the rematch?
I do. I do. And I don't feel like we took a step back. Even if we don't get the rematch immediately, I feel like there's other opportunities for me to grow and prosper and to still be a key player in the middleweight division.
Before I let you go, growing up in Brownsville, that could be a tough section of Brooklyn. Brooklyn has gentrified a lot of ways over the years. My family's originally from Brooklyn as well. I've seen a lot of the changes in my family's neighborhoods and such. When you look at Brooklyn, do you feel like, you know what, this is going in the right direction? Or do you look at it as your neighborhood's losing a piece of its old soul and old identity? Because a lot of people wonder if it'll become too gentrified at times.
Right. No, I'm all for change, especially a positive change. You know, I don't want the culture to be lost in Brooklyn, but that's up to the Brooklynites to keep the culture going. And I think that wouldn't be a hard thing to do whatsoever. I love the fact that we can have nice streets and clean roads, or, you know, good areas for our kids to grow up in. And, you know, Brownsville's still on the last to come, but, you know, we're going to get there one day. I love my community. I love the people in the community, such good people. But, you know, we're going to come around where, you know, we're going to have, you know, the Williamsburg shops and, you know, all these different things where we can be a complete neighborhood.
Yeah, Brownsville might be one of the last, but it's coming. You know, it's coming, absolutely. Because the entire borough is happening. And what happened over at Barclays Center is amazing, isn't it? It's just awesome.
You know, Brooklyn is a it's a tourist attraction now. And
I saw a tourist bus going by the other day. Double-decker tourist buses. What are you guys looking at?
Right. And it's a great thing. You know, I take pride in where I come from. I take pride in, you know, saying that I'm a Brooklynite and saying that the culture here is amazing. So to have the community change in a positive way, you know, I'm all for it and support it.
It's awesome. Your foundation is Get in the Ring. So you can go to getinthering.org, and that's where people can learn more, maybe get involved with the foundation.
Sure, absolutely. We have tons of programs that we have coming up. And if people want to support in any way, shape, possible, they can just go or even see what we got going on. You know, people can support us at our website or our social media outlets. We have Get in the Ring at Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And it's G-I-R Knockout. And people can, you know, follow what we do in the communities there.
On Twitter, Daniel Jacobs is at Daniel Jacobs TKO. On Facebook, Daniel Jacobs TKO. Instagram, Daniel Jacobs TKO. So that's easy to remember.
Yes.
Here's the only thing I ask of you. When you guys get the rematch before your next fight, you got to stop by again.
Oh, no, I would be here.
Is that
this
cool?
Be your first stop.
All right.
Yes, sir.
This is cool. All right. Get in the Ring Foundation. So go to getinthering.org. The Miracle Man, Daniel Jacobs, who has overcome a lot, and he just continues. His career continues to skyrocket. This is cool. He's going to have his own day in Brooklyn on Saturday. Barclays Center, the whole bit. This is going to be awesome. So check him out again on Twitter, at Daniel Jacobs TKO. You're the best, man. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, when we come back here on the show, the NCAA is looking at Bama's coaching staff. Is it going to get a little bit of a nick from the NCAA? We'll get to that coming up next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Open now for brunch.
I'd like to call you George Jefferson. I told you, you're moving up.
DA.
We're going to have night in the day.
On CBS Sports Radio.
Night in the day. Welcome back, DA, with you. Time for the Ring Central Sound of the Week. This week's sound, Russell Westbrook after last night's incredible game, 51, 10 rebounds, 13 assists, and yet the loss.
So how would you grade, when you look at your line on the box score, how would you grade the line?
I don't give a f*** about the line. We lost.
That's one way to put it. That's what you have to love about Russell Westbrook, is that he's hyper-competitive. He's not out there for his numbers. He's out there to win. And I think he is disappointed, discouraged, frustrated, embarrassed that his team is down 0-2 right now. If I'm Russell Westbrook, I'm disheartened because I can put up 51, 10, and 13 and still lose. And not in a last-second shot. But as we talked about last hour, I don't know what else you want Russell Westbrook to do. People are blaming him because he took more shots than any player ever in the fourth quarter and missed more shots in the playoff game than any other player ever. But was it like he had a lot of guys to pass to make those shots? I mean, Oladipo was basically invisible last night. Roberson was your second-best scoring option. Are you really going to say, okay, well, let's put game two of the playoffs in Roberson's hand. Let's just make sure that he gets his shots. To me, I really can't blame Russell Westbrook. Maybe some of them were hurried. Maybe some of them were fast. Maybe some of them weren't necessarily in the flow of the offense. Okay. But you also kind of, you get what you get with Russ. Your business can communicate and collaborate more effectively anytime, anywhere, and on any device. With RingCentral. Learn more at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, communicate, collaborate, connect. I just think you live with Russ because of what he does. And if it doesn't go down, you kind of have to deal with the consequences. And that's what last night was. But am I going to say that Russell Westbrook was selfish last night, that he shot them out of that game? No. Because without it, I don't know what else you want. Without Russell Westbrook on the floor, that's a 30-point blowout. Good response on social media and other places having Danny Jacobs here on the show. My buddy Pete texts me, dude, that guy is solid, humble, came off as just a great guy. Yeah, I think Jacobs is amazing because Danny Jacobs, having gone through what he did, dealing with cancer, life-threatening bone cancer, doctor said he would never walk again, took nearly 2 years off from boxing, came back to the ring and just gave Golovkin his best fight, best challenge ever at MSG last month. He's an extraordinary story. An extraordinary story. And just a great, humble, grounded guy looking to do the right thing and looking to do things that are bigger than boxing. Help stopping bullying. Helping to try to stop childhood obesity. helping kids that are dealing with cancer as well. It's pretty awesome. So the NCAA may be cracking down on Alabama's huge coaching staff, huge football staff. It looks like we've got signals that the NCAA's oversight committee is going to do a quote-unquote deep dive into the size of football staffs. And most around college football believe that that's a direct aim at Alabama. College football is difficult in this way. They are their own entities. They are not a league. We think of them as a league. They are not a league. They are separate fiefdoms that control themselves, which is where so much of the problems come from. This is not 32 owners or 32 programs under one umbrella. The Big Ten legislates itself. The ACC makes its own rules. The SEC does its own thing. There's largely some uniformity, like roster sizes, scholarship limits, things like that. But basically, you run the way the conference wants you to run. And in some ways, teams within their own conference run differently and have different sets of rules. You think Texas is run the same way as Iowa State? No, they have different rules. They have different everything. Now, part of that is Texas goes, well, we make a gazillion dollars more than Iowa State, so we get the winnings. We have our own television network. We have a bigger stadium. We have better facilities. We have bigger everything, a bigger travel budget, more secretaries, a bigger staff, better equipment. We have everything bigger or better and more because we are worth more. But this is the inherent problem. We live in a world in sports where we think, well, everything's got to be equal. And then you get to college football or college athletics and realize, oh, no, everything is not equal. It's not an even playing field. People get this in other parts of the world. In America, it's very difficult for us because the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, the NHL is set up for parity. It's set up for the worst team to have the best chance to get better. And that the best team has the worst chance to get better. And with salary caps, spending is now set. There's a floor. There's a ceiling. It's like restrictor plate racing. We are set up in our sports in America to make everybody in a close bunch make it even and then say, okay, now who's the best? Go to the English Premier League. Ain't nobody think in England that what Man U spends is equal to what Crystal Palace spends. No chance. Or the three teams that are elevated into the EPL every year from the second division. Nobody says, well, those teams have an equal footing and an equal playing field as Arsenal. Nobody. But here we think it. The NCAA is doing the right thing because in college football, Alabama shouldn't be able to afford 50 more staffers than a team that they're playing. There should be some equity. There should be some equation where you're helping the level playing field remain level. And they're always going to have better facilities. They're always going to have a bigger stadium. They're always going to have better donors or deeper pockets. But in terms of a coaching staff, yeah, there's no reason that Alabama should have 50 more coaches than its opponents, specifically if it happens in the conference. There should be regulations, there should be restrictions, because if there's not, what you get is dynasties that will last forever and college football always being this cartel where you can't crack into it unless it's like basically by miracle. This injury report brought to you by the Salt Institute. D.D. Gregorius will begin playing rehab games on Friday. Hasn't played in a game this season after suffering a right shoulder strain in the WBC. Girardi believes that Didi's going to need about 7 or 8 games of rehab before he's ready to return. Yankees, though, are 10-5 without him. What a great homestand for them. 8-1. Aaron Judge does it again, demolishing a baseball into the ether. That's their best homestand since their last World Series title in 09. Salt isn't for just good measure. It's also good for softer water, which is good for you because soft water means smoother skin, silkier hair, and a healthier life. Everything's better with a little salt. See why at littlesalt.org. When we return, the best audio of the day, including a very cranky starting major league pitcher. It's not John Lackey. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Time slot, same great taste.
I'm worried that the sunlight will change how we perform during these interviews.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Don't take a risk on a dead battery. O'Reilly Auto Parts provides free battery testing. If your battery needs to be replaced, professional parts people can find the exact battery that fits your car or truck with free installation. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Welcome back, DA with you. As we roll 9 a.m. until noon Eastern time each and every day here on CBS Sports Radio. And you can watch us by going to watchda.com. Coming up next hour here on the show, Gerald Everett's going to join us. This may end up being the best tight end draft ever. By some draft analysts, this is the best tight end draft in decades. And Gerald Everett's in that conversation. You may have heard of some of the other guys and not Everett because he plays at South Alabama. But when you look at guys like Evan Engram and O.J. Howard, and then you add in a guy like Everett, Everett may have been the best tight end of the top tight end taken if it wasn't for these elite other tight ends coming out of this draft. So it'll be interesting to get to Gerald Everett about all that coming up in about 20 minutes from now. He's looking to be the first ever South Alabama player drafted. Pretty cool. Time for sound check.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Let's start with Clayton Kershaw, who was frustrated when his opponent as a starting pitcher, Tyler Anderson of the Rockies, was dawdling coming out of the bullpen to begin the game, and Kershaw had to wait for this guy to sashay his way into the dugout.
The game starts at 7:10. Started at 7:10 here for a long time. So, you know, just go around or finish earlier. That wasn't appreciated for sure.
Love the competitive snarl from Clayton Kershaw. And, you know, I went over to Citi Field the other day and watched the Mets and Phillies. It was my first game of the season. And so, you know, when you go back into the ballpark, you remember some of the things that maybe you had forgotten over the offseason. I was thinking about all this conversation around delaying, baseball's delay in action and speeding up the game. I went and watched 9 innings of a 10-inning game, and it took nearly 4 hours of baseball time. It was about a 3-hour and 58-minute game for 10 innings, and I saw about 3 hours in 12 or 15 minutes, and I left and it was 3-3. Number one, how does that happen? Tons of pitching changes. But number two, pitchers stepping off the mound every pitch to stop and to think and to communicate with the catchers and all of this. You can't do that. You shouldn't be able to do that. That's the problem. It's not 4 pitches for an intentional walk. The issue is when we have a drive going on in the 2-minute drill in the NFL or college football, the quarterback can't survey the field, look at the defense, and then step out from under center and go, hold on, I need a breather, everybody. Let's just stop the pitch clock. Let's stop the play clock right now. I just need to step away and collect my thoughts. No, that play clock's running, or you got to take a timeout. But in Major League Baseball, there's never-ending timeouts. You can just step out as much as you want to step out or off the mound. That needs to be limited. That's the piece of the puzzle we're missing. If guys just had to step to the mound, step to the hill, and pitch, throw, 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 better, way better. Because then at least there's action. The ball is coming to the plate instead of watching and waiting these guys step off the mound, think about something, wonder about what the square root of pi is, then step back onto the hill. Sashi Brown, Brown's VP of football operations, says, I love my baby Brock, baby Brock, baby Brock, my baby Brock. Brock Osweiler will be competing for the starting job.
We expect Brock to be here. He's in, done a good job coming in the first couple days. Positive young man who's got some ability and talent, and we look forward to him, you know, trying to establish himself here, and he'll have a chance to compete to be starting quarterback.
Baby Brock Osweiler! Brock Osweiler, who is, I'm so upset that they gave my job to Peyton Manning. I want to go anywhere but here. I don't like John Elway. And then he goes to Houston. I don't like Bill O'Brien. Then he gets traded to the Browns. And the Browns are like, okay, we'll take your garbage quarterback, but we need a good draft pick in return. And like, all right, fine. Just get him away. Yeah, I'm sure he'll win that starting job. That should be great. That's going to be a great competition. So, Brock, do you really feel like you have a chance?
This is so unfair. The Browns brought in a draft pick to compete against me. This should be my job.
You know the Browns are going to draft a quarterback or trade for Garoppolo.
I can't believe the Browns brought in competition. I thought this was my job.
Baby Brock, baby Brock, baby Brock. Oh, baby Brock. And finally, Gronk being Gronk. Crashing Sean Spicer's press conference, which basically feels now like an SNL skit within an SNL skit, with Melissa McCarthy playing Sean Spicer and then Gronk playing Gronk on Saturday Night Live.
We'll see what pans out in the negotiation, but I think there's an opportunity. Can I just...
need some help?
I think I got this, but thank you. Maybe. All right, thanks, man. I'll see you in a minute. Hold on.
Yeah, I'm so tired of Gronk. So tired of that act. How long has this been? I guess this has been probably about 7 or 8 years now of Gronk being playful frat boy. Maybe it's just that the Patriots are always in the news. You know, if he played for the Cleveland Browns, we wouldn't have to worry about him at the White House breaking into press conferences. He wouldn't have commercials or be the cover boy of ESPN the magazine kissing kittens. But I'm so tired of this. I don't know. Like, that act was funny when you're a rookie, second year guy, all right. But then once we got to Gronk having his own tour boats, or what was that stupid boat that he, a cruise?
The Gronk Party Cruise.
The Gronk Party Cruise. I'm just like, okay, now we've really jumped the shark. I mean, is the Gronk act still funny to people?
Not at all. Not at all. And why is everybody laughing? Like, nothing political here, but that's a pretty serious press conference from the, you know, step behind the curtain and make jokes at. You know what I mean?
I just think that maybe because sports media people are bored largely by boring press conferences and boring anecdotes and boring coach speak, that anytime Gronk does anything, it's like, oh, it's so funny. Oh, Gronk is just being so funny. But I gotta feel like most people know exactly what the bit is, and it's tired. I don't know. Then again, Kevin James keeps getting TV shows and movies made, so maybe Gronk's the Kevin James of football.
Kevin Can Wait's a great show, and it's excellent on CBS Monday nights at 8:30. Don't hate on it.
Okay, so how about Adam Sandler's new Netflix movie, Sandy Wexler?
Awful. We've had enough of Adam Sandler. His act got old.
Okay, so is Gronk now Adam Sandler?
Yes. Gronk had his Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore moments. Now I'm, you know, what are we up to? Click three, get lost.
Yes. So what we're saying is Sandy Wexler on Netflix is like a bad version of, what was the one? He hit me in the face with a shovel. What was that? Oh, he was the devil.
Little Nicky?
Yes. So we're saying Sandy Wexler is like Little Nicky, but worse. And that was 10 years ago, so that's kind of Gronk at this point.
Right, it's Gronk smashing another beer can against his head. Okay, 2003 called.
Yeah, okay. And that's your sound check. You see Sandler, and I used to be a huge Sandler fan. Loved him on SNL, loved Billy Madison, even loved Big Daddy. Loved Happy Gilmore. There's some good movies in there, but the Hanukkah song. You know, 20 years later, you're talking like this again. You're like, okay, I've seen this movie so many times.
The Grown Ups 1, Grown Ups 2.
Oh, don't get me started on Grown Ups 1
Let's
and 2.
Pop Rob Schneider in another film.
Oh, don't
we get it. You have friends.
Don't get me started. Gronk is Adam Sandler. Adam Sandler is Gronk. Finkel is Einhorn. So yesterday, one of the coolest moments of the baseball season thus far, as Ichiro, in his final at-bat at Safeco Field in front of the fans that he played so many years for with the Mariners, goes yard.
Marshall, ready to work. He kicks and delivers, and Ichiro hits a high fly ball. This is deep to right. It is going to be up, up and away. A home run for Ichiro in Seattle. His first of this season. Ichiro has gone deep. How about that?
How about that?
Career hit number 3,031. A huge standing ovation for Ichiro here in this ballpark.
Dave Van Horn on Marlins Radio. There's just something really fun about hearing an old school baseball announcer like Dave Van Horn pronouncing Ichiro as Ichiro or Ichiro, like it's itchy and scratchy.
Itchy nipple chubra.
Ichiro. Like very whitewashed there. Ichiro. That's like when you're going to Ichiban in Des Moines. You're like, we're going to go to Ichiban.
Itchy nipple chubra.
Ichiro has gone deep.
Yes, Ichiro. So there's Jock Ichiro went yard yesterday. And this is really cool because Ichiro ends up having undoubtedly a Hall of Fame career. I still don't know if we properly appreciate what happened with Ichiro's career. Let me just put this into some type of context. He came to Major League Baseball when he was 27 years old, which is 16 years ago. He's had a 16-year Major League Baseball career and started it at 27. He led the league in hits his rookie season with 242, again with 262, 224, 238, 213, 225, 214. He led the league in hits 7 times in his first 10 years. He made an All-Star game every year from 01 through 2010. He was a top 10 in the MVP 4 times in his career and won the MVP and Rookie of the Year in his rookie season. He hit 350, 372. This is his batting averages from the moment he walked into the league. 350, 321, 312, 372, 303, 322, 351, 310, 352, 315. First time under 300 was 10 years into his Major League Baseball career, and he was already 38. You can't combine his hits from Japan and say that he's the all-time hit king. You can't, because the Japanese league is AAA, maybe AA, AA to AAA, some AAA pitchers, some AA pitchers. In other words, it'd be like adding everybody's minor league stats to their professional stats, their major league stats. You can't do it. So no, Ichiro is not.
Ichiro.
Yeah, Ichiro is not the all-time hit king. But he's undoubtedly a Cooperstown Hall of Famer. Undoubtedly. Ichiro is one of the great hitters of all time. He started his career at 27 years old. He has 3,033 hits.
Ichiro.
The guy has hit 3,000 hits and started his career at 27.
Itchy nipple chubra.
He has a career 312 batting average, a 760 OPS. He had an amazing, amazing career. And maybe it is hurt by three things, okay? It is unfortunately marginalized by three things here in the States. Number one, he started late. So had he begun his career at 20, 21, 22, like most, his stats would be so ridiculous, we would constantly just froth over them. But because
he's played since he was 27. They look like just a really good Hall of Famer's career. Number two, the end of it hasn't been great. He played forgettable years with the Yankees, with the Marlins now. I mean, these have not been memorable Ichiro years, as Dave Van Horn would say.
Ichiro!
And number three, without speaking the language, we don't know what Ichiro is all about. We don't know his personality. We don't know what makes him tick. He kind of feels like a baseball phantasm. Like, he's there, he plays, he's had a lot of hits. He definitely plays like a different style of baseball. But does he have a last name? Is Ichiro his first name or his last name? Is he just one name like Prince and Madonna?
The last name's the first name. The first name's the last name. That's always confusing.
People can't really embrace Ichiro because he's kind of an enigma. We never hear him speak. We don't know what his personality's like. And I think that hurts how much we appreciate him. When we return here on the show, potential first-round draft pick at tight end, Gerald Everett. Does your team need a tight end? You'll want to hear this guy coming up next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.